This is Michael, host of the political podcast, Cuckoo for Politics. I am so passionate about politics, hence the name Cuckoo for Politics, and I hope you are too. Thanks for joining. This is a podcast discussion on political perspectives on various issues that matter with citizens of the world. So I do ask that you grab your favorite libations, whether it be coffee, tea, water, juice, beer, wine, or a spirit or two, and let's get ready for some lively conversation and let's learn something together. In America, political scientists examine voting patterns among the electorate for the purposes of understanding what core issues motivates the voter. Factors such as sex, socioeconomic backgrounds, education, neighborhoods, sexual orientation, religion, are just a few variables that are taken under consideration in understanding the voter and their voting patterns. This is done specifically in order to ascertain what specific issues resonates with various groups of people. There is no question both established political parties, Democrat and Republican, have a reliable base of voters they can count on during every election season. They continuously invest in ways to expand their political influences by always maintaining a pulse on the people. However, when a group of dedicated voters change their voting patterns, the political parties do take notice and make attempts to adapt and re-strategize. In a CNN exit poll taken from this recent midterm election, it was discovered that support for Democrats was under 55%. That was down from 63% in 2018 among members of the Hispanic and Latino communities. In that same poll, Hispanic women still favor Democratic candidates, but that too is slowly in decline. California, Texas, Florida, New York, and Arizona are states with the highest degree of Hispanic populations. However, they're also taking residency in other states in record numbers, not only adding to the diversity in culture, but also influencing the political landscape. In episode 26 of this year, a raw and cut episode of Power of the Vote, you may recall I discussed the trend of how African Americans were at one point a reliable base of dedicated voters for the Republican Party. However, over time, majority of those same African Americans began voting Democrat as a result of various laws passed, notably the Civil and Voting Rights Act, that was signed by Democratic presidents. This resulted in changing the political landscape of the country. Politicians in general adapt to the changes of their constituency, but when it is discovered of a new trend, like the growing number of Hispanic and Latino voters leaning more conservative than liberal, politicians take notice and re-strategize in order to maintain the group's support. Case in point, Maya Flores, an outspoken conservative, won a special election this past summer, becoming the first Mexican-born woman in the House of Representatives representing the 34th Congressional District. That election secured an unlikely Republican victory in a Latino-dominated part of southern Texas. She tapped to the community's fear of people crossing the border and their strong religious traditional values. In an article in The Economist dated back last year of November 21, titled Latin Hex, which kind of inspired me to do this podcast episode, the article describes how an Angel Castillo, a Dominican, a small business owner, and a longtime resident in Passaic, New Jersey, his entire family are registered Democrats, but they voted Republican. When Donald Trump descended down the escalator stairs at Trump Tower to announce his candidacy for U.S. president, you remember he called Mexican immigrants rapists, amongst many other derogatory names. It was safely assumed that Hispanic voters would take offense and vote for anyone but Trump or members of his party. One would think that Trump's xenophobic rhetoric would make Hispanics recoil and in unison vote against him. Although it was cited that some were offended and did not support him, especially young college-educated Hispanics, The extreme polarization of Trump's rhetoric actually had a direct opposite. Remember I mentioned Angel Castillo from New Jersey? He said in the article he loved what he heard, and he commented that Trump kept it real. He didn't say all Latinos are rapists. He said a lot of those coming over the border are rapists and drug dealers. And he's right. Congresswoman Flores' message during the campaign was a strong advocate for border security and support of traditional family values. So how is it possible that Trump won more Latino votes in 2020 than his initial presidential campaign in 2016? How did a Congresswoman Flores, raised in a Democratic household, but eventually evolved to becoming Republican and win a special election this summer? Is this a continuous voting trend or just a phenomenon among Hispanics? Joining me in this conversation are two longtime residents of Arizona, Jeffrey and Elizabeth Gordon, two fellow Eastern Nazarene College alums, and like this host, majored in history and are avid political junkies. Elizabeth is an assistant director of international instructional design for innovation and emerging initiatives in EdPlus at Arizona State University. In addition, she has over 14 years experience in teaching history at Mesa Community College. As a certified project management professional, she holds a master's degree in history from Arizona State University and has a multiple instructional design certifications. Jeffrey, her husband, is an emergency responder for over 26 years as a firefighter paramedic for the Mesa Fire Medical Department. Within that department, he holds specializations in aircraft rescue, airport rescue firefighting, hazardous materials technician, and is a certified firefighter instructor. Jeffrey has a master's in science degree in emergency management and an executive fire service leadership from Grand Canyon University, an associate's degree in fire science from Rio Salado Community College. They have been married for over 27 years and have three sons, Devin, Miles, and Julian. I invited this longtime residents of Arizona as that they're not only very active in their communities, but are willing to share their political perspectives on this topic. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Cuckoo for Politics. Let's get ready for some lively discussion while learning something together. What's up, guys? And thank you for joining me in this episode on Cuckoo for Politics. Let me first begin by stating this question. Now, follow me here. The term Hispanic and Latino are often used interchangeably in conversations. My friends of those respective backgrounds tell me it's not necessarily offensive when using such labels. However, they stress or point out that it's important to know the distinctions between the two. Hispanics are referred to people who speak Spanish and/or their descendants are from Spain. Latinos, on the other hand, are referred to people whose heritage are from Latin American countries, with the exception of the Brazilian people. Yo, that is another topic in itself, and for the purpose of this conversation, we'll be referring to the people who speak Spanish. With that being said, what do you guys think of these classifications of race within that demographic group? And what role do you think religion plays, whereas Hispanics seem to be voting more conservative than liberal?
Let me see if I think I can try to answer both questions, but then also give the caveat that it's complicated. So isn't that crazy? I mean, it's complicated. So for Hispanics, let's just start with the issue of demographics. In the U.S. Census, we have a process, we got a part in our U.S. Census that says Hispanic and Hispanic white or Hispanic non-white. So you have amongst race a category in which you can have where race is elastic, right? So we're talking about are you there? Am I here?
We're here.
Okay, good. So we're talking about a situation where you can identify in either as Hispanic non-white or Hispanic white. So just from our understanding of demographics, you have a sense of, well, I can go into this, I can go into this category, or I can go to this category. Will I be accepted in this category, or will I not be accepted in this category? So just from our demographic forms, our census forms, you have a sense that race, in a sense, can be elastic. And we've kind of always known that, right? I mean, you know, when we talk, you know, when you talk about race, race is a construct. You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about race being a construct, but that's one construct. And for Hispanics, and when you look at how Hispanics could be integrated and assimilated into white spaces and white culture, there's an easier assimilation process within that. And you see that with our marital rates. And you'll see that in our marital rates between white Americans, and when they enter into an interracial relationship, what is that minority group that they are integrating with? And by far and away, white people, when they do get into an interracial relationship, by far and away, the interracial relationship is white to Hispanic. And then then further away is white to Asian. And so we're seeing a connection between Hispanics and white America you're not seeing as much of a distinction. The second thing I would mention is faith. For many Hispanics, they have a very strong faith-based family structure, and they've done that for years, whether they started out as Catholics, a lot of the things that they center family around is family and faith, family, faith, and country. And that, to their core, is who they are. If you have somebody talk to that and bring that into a space that speaks to a more political position now, that your faith is important to various positions within our country, that will speak to them. And at the moment, Republicans are mobilizing Hispanics of faith, very much like the Democratic Party has mobilized Black people of faith to the polls. And they have said it clearly themselves, the Republican Party, that they have to utilize, connect with the Hispanic community through their churches, very much like how the Democratic Party connects African Americans with their churches or through their churches.
Cuckoo for Politics podcast is brought to you by Global Pulse Media, which has partnered with Hivecast FM, a firm that assembles a creative and professional team that takes podcasts such as Cuckoo for Politics to the next level. This team handles all audio and video editing services. So for a nominal fee, you will get a personal account manager that helps take the headache out of editing and just leave podcasters like myself focus on just creating good content for their audiences. So if you're a podcaster listening and need help editing, feel free to reach out to me. I can be reached at cuckooforpolitics@gmail.com. I could not have succeeded without this talented team at Hivecast FM. So it sounds like both parties are relying on persons of color to include them in their base in order to win the votes and to gain power, I would say. It's interesting because it seems like the trend has been, we know that both parties are diverse. One, the Democratic Party seems to be more diverse than the Republican Party. And I guess it's because based on the representation, those who are in the high profile positions, you see, when you look at the Republican leadership, you see mostly older white men and sprinkles of women in there. And then you see the same thing, older on the Democratic side, you have a woman speaker, but you also have older men, but also, but they all dive at once. I think Clyburn is from South Carolina. He's Black. Yeah. I mean, you see more diverse on the Democratic side, but it's, you hit it on the nose, because I've often wondered why there are certain Hispanic groups that are leaning towards the Republican brand, but the Democratic brand, I don't know of, I hear the religion being tossed around, but I don't know of a Democratic candidate or elected official is spouting anti-religion for that matter.
I don't think they are, but I think that some of the hot button issues that are core to the Democratic Party for the deeply religious community are antithetical. For example, support for gay marriage and gay rights, support for the abortion issue. Those have become kind of wedge issues for the deeply religious communities that become complete non-starters. It's like, if you are supporting gay rights, oh, you can't really be a Christian. And, you know, if you're supporting abortion rights, you can't really be a Christian. Those, I've heard those statements said by people of deep faith. So I think that's something where, you know, Democratic candidates can be deeply religious. We saw this with Obama, deeply religious man, talked about his faith, but because of his political positions, the right just refused to see him as a man of faith. And I think the Democratic Party, in trying to be inclusive and in striving to be inclusive and to make inclusivity a part of the political landscape, has in effect alienated some of the more deeply religious elements. I do think there's another factor in the Hispanic conversation. And I think it's the classic wet foot, dry foot immigrant view, where the immigrants who came, quote unquote, the right way, or in the case of Hispanics, those Hispanics who have been here for generations and generations, do look down on other newer immigrants. And I think that it's the, you know, I'm one of the good ones. And to Jeff's point, they enhance that, I'm one of the good ones, because then they can access the full range of moving through society and, you know, avoid discrimination, intermarry at will. So I think there also is that aspect as well.
And that's a whole mouthful that you said, and because there's a lot of thoughts that come in my head when you're talking. And I, the response about the Democratic Party, and
I disagree with my wife on this one, because
I want to find out, not find out, but the response of the Democratic Party is just reacting to the change of demographics. The Republican Party, too, when they were abolitionist, yep, during the slavery, they once were advocating to end slavery. And it was on the other side that did not view freeing blacks. They viewed it as anti-religion, against their faith. But it was the changing demographics that the party responded to. And so I would say the same thing about being more inclusive to people of a different sexual orientation. It's just the society has changed. So you can't prevent that from happening. And that was my point, that talking about the change of what the Democrats are attracted to and how the Republicans. But Jeff, you had a opposing view from your wife.
Yes, and the question was, you know, it's really hard, it's a difficult position when you're talking to people of deep faith. When we're talking about deep faith, some of these no-go issues. And I think for people of faith like Elizabeth and I, deep faith, knowing how to talk to our brothers and sisters of deep faith who are Democrats, who are black, when I think when we speak on the issue of, look, you may not like what they do, and it may be something that you may not order in your life and it goes against scripture, but we're talking about who they should be and how we should interact with them in our society. Remember, not everybody's going to like everything that everybody does in our society, but if it's lawful, they can contribute to American society And it's the right thing to do to treat somebody well. You may not like, you know, you may not, I may not agree with somebody who lives a lifestyle of what's that lifestyle, honey, where you have
that's
multiple
different parties.
Just different.
It's just different. It is what it is. It is what it is.
But you know what? They work. They do. I mean, they're fine. That doesn't mean I should treat them poorly. You know, and I think we, the Democratic Party, should really don't be afraid to really lean in to all parts of our diversity. You know, we have a lot of people in our Democratic Party who are people of deep faith. And we also have people who are in our party who have no faith, who are ambivalent about faith. We have people in our party who are lesbians, biracial. I mean, look, we can come and use all of that strength to say, look, it all makes us good. I mean, we can all come together to make America a better America. We should not try to diminish who you are because I'm uncomfortable or it's against my, you know, my particular faith. There's lots of things that it'd be like, but that shouldn't deny you being an American.
Right. To be clear, I was not trying to say the Democratic Party needs to change their stance to make these folks.
I think they should. I don't think they do it. I think we don't talk about the people of faith enough. We cede that ground to the Republican Party, as if you know there are, you know, when we talk about people of faith, only the Republican Party, and we even there talking about people of faith in the Republican Party, you go, wow, their book looks a little different than mine. But
all right, but here let me push back on you a little bit though here, because
okay,
you talked about you know, the African American community being able to simultaneously hold a personal opinion, but cede the ground and the civic space for people exercising their rights and their freedoms.
Correct.
In a segment of the Hispanic population, they do not have that foundational grounding in the civil rights movement because they've been accepted into the white society. They are the Hispanic white population. And so for them, that civil rights, that ability for people to live their lives is not as ingrained. They have not been on the receiving end of anti-Hispanic racism because they pass. Unless their name is Garcia, which, you know, some of them it is, but even then, you have a lot of, if you're Garcia, but you speak perfect English and you look white, okay, no problem. That Garcia was way back then, and they aren't on that same receiving end. And so when you couple that Hispanic, white, deeply religious, and that lack of a core mooring of civil rights orientation where you say, I am not going to infringe on someone else's right to live their life. Evangelicals have absolutely no qualms whatsoever about infringing on rights. It's not something.
See, but
that
here's
is,
the thing, though.
They're not based in that civil rights movement. And
do you think the Black church has moved their position much on LGBTQ issues?
Not as a sin issue. I wouldn't speak wholesale,
I would still say that the Black church, we've been part of the Black church here, it's still a hostile space.
It's more traditional, I would say. I think I know where you're going with this. It seems to be a little more traditional, and that's what the Republican base or evangelicals team tends to lean towards. I find it the irony that they thought Obama was not a strong person of faith, yet they found someone who paid porn stars off and definitely cheated and blatantly disrespected. And he was, yeah, anyway,
morally bankrupt,
but okay. They embrace him. But then we have our current president, who's a devout Catholic who has not shied away from his faith, and they view him and people that he represent, or as far as the Democratic Party, eating babies. I'm like, where do you get that from? The man is very, very, very religious. So, I mean, granted, he's even said, I have struggles with certain dilemmas, but again, I am president of the United States. Yeah. I'm not president of one faith of the United States.
No, and you have to represent all.
And I'm afraid you even hear Marjorie Taylor Greene, who professed in one of the rallies that she would like to make Christianity as the faith of America. I'm like, no, it can't be. And there are people who, if she even knew her own history, people fleed different parts of the country, particularly in Europe, for religious freedom. You can't force that one religion into one in this America. Anyway,
if you even knew your Bible, if she knew her Bible, she would know that she would not, you know, sacrifice the cross for a crown, you know. But that's the thing, when they use faith, and faith is so so superficial, you know, for so many people. And I think that's one of the downfalls of, you know, one of the things that's happened with faith. With Christianity today is it's gotten so superficial, where people, again, not wanting to do the hard work, the real work. You know, they want to be able to put on a cross around their neck and just say, I'm a Christian. And then that covers everything. That covers everything. Now, I'm a good person. I do this, and I don't have to read my Bible. I don't have to understand anything. That's it. That I'm a Christian. And it's like, it's almost like a social, cultural Christian. It's just like, hey, and it's like being a person of faith is a little bit more than that, you know? So
I agree, and I had a quote, but I won't. I'll save that for my closing comments on that point. Anything else you want to add on the Hispanic perspectives?
One last thing on the Hispanic perspectives. Over the last 30 years, the evangelical church has been cratering with people coming to church. And it's been an existential crisis for at least the last 20 years. Like, oh my goodness, where is everybody coming? Well, where's everybody going? Well, everybody's leaving because they're having, you know, our generation, our kids' generation are having a hard time reconciling the things that the church is saying and the things that they do. But there is one demographic that is growing by leaps and bounds and are growing congregations and are becoming a major player within the evangelical space are first generation, recently arrived Hispanic immigrants who are growing the evangelical church. They even leapt from Catholicism and they're joining evangelical churches and planting and making evangelical churches within 5 years of coming here to the United States. So the irony here is the base of the Republican Party, which is evangelical, has so much animosity against immigration and illegal immigration, but it's literally the people that are coming here, especially over the last 20 years, that are growing the church. You know, they're not able to grow the church to the extent of the people that are leaving and being able to even the replacement, but they are still the ones. It'd be even worse in terms of the numbers of people leaving evangelicalism if not for even immigration from the South and people coming to the country and wanting to engage by trying to be a part of the community and starting and being part of their evangelical church communities. So I just wanted to mention that being an important factor, such an important part. Now I think they want to, the Republican Party is starting to recognize that. And the irony is they're utilizing these churches that started 5 years ago, 7 years ago, you know, with newcomers. And they're wanting to now try to enter into those church spaces to get them out to come out to vote and vote Republican.
And one of the issues that you say too about I've often heard is that I'm not against those coming in from other countries to America. It's just they have to respect the process. They don't like those who are walking across, cutting the line, so to speak, from instead of doing what they did or their ancestors did as far as going to the U.S. Consul office in their respective countries, filing the paperwork, and coming through. And I get that. However, and it seems like that process needs to be reexamined because it's either too slow or not efficient enough to meet the demand and the new technologies. It's similar to when, again, ratification, but there's a process to go through. And I said with immigration, it's an all out, you need to put a lot of ideas and policies on the table to see what works. And one of the things is staffing the necessary resources, the court system, and people into these respective areas, and find a source of why these individuals are coming in. But both of you have raised a lot of subject matters on religion. Again, I have to bring that into another topic because, you know, when you talk about that, it's a whole different conversation. And
remember where we met.
I do remember, and because out of respect of, I will have to cease that part of the conversation. Yes. And but I know for certain that I'll have to bring you back again as a guest on Cuckoo for Politics, because you guys have so much to add to the conversation. And that's before liquor.
I've just been drinking water. So, man, if we had a component of that, good night.
It would be like all hours. It would be Cuckoo for Politics 24/7. Well, once again, thank you for joining me as my guest. Hopefully, again, I'll bring you back on a future episode, and stand by for my closing thoughts. Before I close, let me first say thank you for listening and ask that you subscribe to this podcast, which can be listened on Apple, Google, Spotify, Anchor, or whatever podcast platform you choose to listen. Once you subscribe, you'll be able to get the latest episodes that drops, as well as some bonus features. Follow me on Facebook under Cuckoo for Politics, or Instagram, Cuckoo_4_politics, or my very own website, cuckoo4politics.com. Feel free to comment on either of those platforms, as I welcome all feedback. Now, a significant number of Hispanic voters in Arizona and Nevada helped elect Joe Biden to become the 46th U.S. president. Those same states with the same demographics helped Democrats retain control of the Senate. Hispanic voting bloc, like all similar ethnic groups, are not monolithic when it comes to voting. Case in point, Texas and Florida too have influential Hispanic populations, but they did not deliver the same political wins for Democrats in the last presidential and recent congressional midterm elections. Hispanics, in large part, are incomparably more diverse than the earlier waves of immigrants that came to U.S. shores from Europe. Hispanics are more diverse in characteristic, white and non-white, and the political lens ranges from an array of issues, especially when it comes to the issues of religion. When Ronald Reagan came into office back in the 1980s, he strategically embraced the hardworking, religious, communism-hating Hispanics into becoming Republican. Similarly, Trump has somehow convinced Hispanics of not only of those same issues, but endeared himself to the Miami Cuban exiles by calling the Democrats socialists. That label stuck. Republicans have been able to paint every Democrat as a socialist. New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, aka AOC, a Puerto Rican, is depicted as a far leftist, which in some Hispanic circles reminds them of a dictatorship regimes. Democratic politicians are either too slow to respond or defend such outlandish accusations, thus cementing the far-left Castro image in the voter's mind. I don't love the Republicans, but my Christian values compel me to vote for them. This was said by Hector Fernandez, a 69-year-old evangelical minister in Passaic, New Jersey. He was asked, how does he feel about the elections, in the article Latin Hex from The Economist magazine. He estimated that over half his congregation voted Republican. It is this religious relationship that the Republican Party that has somehow copped Christians, especially Hispanics, into voting Republican. This is most intriguing as the Democratic Party also consists of voters of various faiths, including those of Christianity. Another aspect that seems to attract such voters to the Trump brand of the GOP is the perception that he is a successful businessman, and many in the Hispanic community own small businesses. Republican-led states took an opposition to the lockdowns, while the Democratic-led states kept those measures in place, as well as incrementally opened up their markets at the height of the pandemic. Many small businesses suffered under such degrees and misdirected their anger to any politician with a D next to their name. Many Hispanics admired a hard right conservative views on immigration. Many view these immigrants crossing the border only to take advantage of the American welfare system versus people who are fleeing out of survival. However, new polling by the Pew Research Center, a think tank, suggests that the fight for reproductive rights might have helped nudge Latinos back to the Democratic favor. Large share of Latino voters reported that they considered abortion a very important electoral matter, which rose from the percentage of 42% to 57%, surpassing their concerns about immigration and racial issues. That change is greater than the average shift among all registered voters. Latinos, like the rest of America, are becoming more secular. According to the same poll, a majority of 57%, think abortion should be legal. That share is greater among women, who tend to register and vote at higher rates than men. In August, four majority Latino counties in southwest Kansas helped tip the balance against a referendum to ban abortions in deeply Republican red state. Catherine Cortez Masto, a Democrat, the first and only Latina elected to the Senate, was reelected this past November as she made the right to an abortion a central campaign issue. Her opponent, Adam Laxalt, a former attorney general, he basically called Roe versus Wade a joke, hence why he lost, which tipped the balance of power in Democratic favor. Do you remember in my introduction of this episode, I mentioned a Republican congresswoman named Maya Flores, an outspoken conservative who won a special election this past June, becoming the first Mexican-born woman in the House of Representatives representing Southern Texas? Well, she lost her seat this past November, in large part due to her hard right-wing conservative views. Her political career was very short-lived. Now, don't get me wrong. Like all constituencies, there are divisions that exist within the Latino voting bloc. The issue of abortion rights is still a major issue for Democrats than Republican Latinos, much like the wider electorate. The economy is a major concern, and according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Latinos across America have been hit harder by inflation than Asian, Black, and white voters. The Latino vote is becoming increasingly powerful in America's elections, and polling shows that Democrats are doing a better job of earning their votes than Republicans. However, no political party and or politician can afford to sleep at the wheel if they wish to be elected to public office. In my next episode, political commentator and brother of Raw and Cut, Sam Jean, joins me as we discuss the many takeaways from this year's midterm elections, as well as what took place in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Ohio, and of course, Georgia. How is Herschel Walker still in the race? Anyway, this is Michael, host of the political podcast, Cuckoo for Politics. Until the next podcast, stay blessed.